Postcard from Lille, part 20, Gateway to Gateway. I'm in Josefina Island in the middle of the Philippine archipelago and have just rendezvoused, now that the typhoon has passed, with my business associate Giselle. She has pleasantly surprised me with a business opportunity, a franchise. Not only that, she has already signed for it and, in not such a pleasant surprise, signed it for me as well. We say a poignant goodbye to her mother, Ninny, her girl twin sisters and Mathilde the housemaid, my little spy in the family, and make our way down to the docks for the super ferry journey to another island. The maritime safety record isn't great and the ferries are very packed. Part of the lifeboat drill is for the older men, and that includes me, taking off their life belts and giving them to younger people who haven't got one. A rehearsal for realising the lifeboat's already being more than full as you untie your life belt and pull it over your head that you're about to drown. Unless, of course, you're an alpha male who doesn't need a life belt, in which case the sharks are about to eat you alive. At the next port, we connect with a hydrofoil to another island and then a pump boat to our destination island. A pump boat is a big canoe-shaped boat carrying dozens rather than hundreds of people, powered by an outdoor motor or two and kept stable by an outlying spar on each side. We arrive at the next little dot on the map and Giselle begins to explain the franchise to me as we haggle for a pedicab to take us along a dirt track. She signed us up for an exclusive muffler franchise for the island. A pedicab is a motorbike or bicycle pulling us for passengers. A muffler is another name for a car silencer. At the end of the track, the route is very rough and there are horses to hire. We continue on horseback for about half an hour to a better road. We've committed to take so many automobile silencers a month, more or less for the rest of our lives, at a reasonable price. At the main road, we hail two rickshaws to take us to the capital of the island. A busy place, packed with water buffalo and carts, horses, motorbikes and more pedicars, rickshaws and cycles. We will find premises and staff and train people up. It will run itself. It's an exclusive franchise. We just keep the difference between buying in bulk and selling one at a time. Can't fail. Money for nothing. After fitting the automobile silencers to the, horses, cycles, rickshaws, buffaloes and pedicars. Yes, we've committed to a car silencer franchise for an island with no cars. There was a mad dash all the way to Manila to untangle our legal obligation via small print escape clauses and force majeure. Mufflers R Us was stillborn. You may recall one of Giselle's sisters, Narissa or Issa, was an attorney. I hear you say it's unethical to represent a very close relative. Giselle and Issa got around that by sending me the bill. You live and learn. Issa's house was 5227 San Agustin Street, in one of the better public avenues, rather than a gated subdivision, in Makati City. It was our base in Metro Manila, MM, and was also the base for other members of Giselle's extended family, which allowed for a bit of networking. We're engaged in setting up a trading triangle between Paranaki, MM, where Giselle's relative, Freddie Webb, is a senator, Davao City, where I'm based, and Josefina Island, Giselle's family seat. Because Davao is in the Christian half of the lawless south, in the Foreign Office's skull and crossbone zone, the British Embassy maintain a bit of extra interest in me. Mrs. Thatcher always used to say, and rightly so, that the FO exists for the benefit of foreigners. They do tend to go a bit native. At the time, the embassy was a couple of floors in a skyscraper, which wasn't much fun. Disappointingly, embassy receptions would be there, or in a postage stamp-sized garden at somebody's residence. You would wait to be invited, someone posh would circulate, start a conversation about the weather, and then gently draw you towards being pumped for info. It was bad form to invite yourself to these gatherings, but I did so twice. Once when a smartly dressed man on a bus in a business suit offered to buy HMS Broadsword from me. I kid you not. I felt I had to pass the message on, just in case. The other time was an interesting little opportunity that contained so many unlikely coincidences that I felt it might have been meant to happen. Everybody likes a pretty girl, and I was plagued by them. One stands out in my mind, and I shall use her as a relevant example. For reasons that will become obvious, I have no hesitation in using her real name. She was called Evangelista Vange de Reyes. All this began in the first class departure lounge at the domestic terminal at Manila's Ninoy Aquino Airport, where one meets a better class of crook. The domestic and international terminals were separate, but at the same airfield, named after the deceased opposition leader Ninoy Aquino, who had been taken off a plane and shot dead by Ferdinand Marcos's goons when Aquino had returned from political exile. The domestic airport and its first-class lounge were modest, slab-sided concrete boxes in those days. Outside was an aviation museum lineup of the day's flights, including Skyvans, Dakotas, and IL-76s. One day I saw Constellation. There was also a row of BAC-111s, many being cannibalised for parts. Noisy things. Avoid. I was standing next to a big fan, suffering in the heat, when a very pretty girl came up to me, introduced herself as Vanji, and we fell into conversation. She was flying down to Davao City 2, a resident of Sunny Hills Subdivision, her father a businessman in retail, a friend of Mr. Gaisano. She was kind enough to offer to help me to use up my unused baggage allowance with her packages, at which point I told her to get lost, in case she had a bomb in them. She looked pensive, close to tears. She bit her lip, apologised, looked up at me through her fringe with big dark eyes, and with a wavering voice offered to make it up to me by, when we were called, checking me in at the desk in the native language, speeding everything up, and getting me a better seat and meal. The old fool fell for it. On the plane, her enthusiasm waned. She became monosyllabic, unenthusiastic about swapping phone numbers, developed a headache, and then on disembarking disappeared, although from the corner of my eye I might have caught the back of her head as she sprinted away. Perhaps unsurprisingly, there was a problem trying to leave the airport, and I was vast. I was so busy looking at those big eyes, perhaps I'd missed her manhandling one of those giant refrigerators, or a crate full of beer bottles filled with lead behind her back. In truth, this often happened. I just refused to pay the airline, told them I'd been conned by a pretty stranger, again, and got away with it. In fact, myself and Giselle would sometimes pull the same trick. However, just out of interest, as Vanji had given me enough free information, I made inquiries around Davao. I had a network of housemaids who I paid, in little perfume samples, for information. They came up with a surname. Not only was Evangelista a de Reyes, but one of the de Reyes, with a bona fide address in the exclusive Sun Hills subdivision. I should pay a visit. A few days later I did. But first, did somebody mention Mr. Gaisano? I hope it was a compliment. Mr. Gaisano owned a downtown department store at a time when that particular type of retail was moving towards out-of-town shopping malls. At least it was in Manila, a trend bound to spread to the provinces. The big malls in the capital could easily manage a footfall of 500,000 per day and have floor space exceeding 2.5 million square feet. It always made me smile that, at the time, such big malls in the economically challenged parts of England were taken as some kind of futuristic sign of success. The business model is based on cheap land, cheap labour, and a mountain of imported goods bought by another mountain of consumer debt. Mr. Gaisano's downtown department store had seen better days. Imagine Grace Brothers, semi-derelicts, fairly deserted, covered in lizards, but with the same overheads, the same immaculately turned out self-important staff and complacent management. Not only that, but competition was on the way, in the shape of Davao's first mall, under construction, Victoria Plaza, quite a monolith to Mammon, on a main road halfway to the airport. And it boasted the mother of all, 500 miles from the equator, unique selling points, an outdoor ice skating rink. Just as you might think that things couldn't get any gloomier for downtown Gaisano's, the place burnt to the ground in the middle of the night. Worse still, the police made no progress at all in hunting for the arsonists. Just when you might think that the tropical sun had set on Mr. Gaisano's empire, the gods of retail began to stir. They say that retail is detail and success is timing. Fortunately, the day before the fire, the store had been insured. In fact, close attention to the small print showed that it had been massively overinsured. When questioned, the insurance salesman's recently abandoned wife reported, in what was probably a rare outbreak of honest truth, that her missing husband had been called in the middle of the previous night and given the consumer offer of a roll of money to disappear with, or two broken legs. Being a publicly spirited kind of chap, Mr. Gaetano declared that he would carefully invest the insurance windfall and help to develop the local economy by building a giant mall, well placed to compete with Victoria, whose cynical and untrusting management were now spending nearly as much on security as on bricks and concrete. This, dear reader, is the kind of competitive business environment that I was tiptoeing towards as I approached the security gates at Sunny Hills with a proposition that Miss Evangelista Vangerdurais couldn't refuse. They say that, before the war, Kim Philby was a courier for the Soviet Union, based in Vienna, travelling across Eastern European borders, carrying currency and sealed instructions to other Soviet spies. They also say that he was never challenged on account of his demeanour and British passport. I can second that, as I was able to stroll past security and onto the subdivisions in Davao just under Mina, without even bothering either of my passports, a trick I wasn't able to pull in Manila, where some of the residences were more exclusive and I was less of a novelty. I would find Vanji's house, introduce myself to the maid, say that I would like to thank Vanji personally for helping me with my flight and, if I may, hand her a little present, the most expensive, exclusive and branded of my perfume samples. She'll be pleased to receive me, being stuck in front of MTV all day, trapped in her room as a result of busy, absent and overprotective parents. Over glasses of mango juice, she would be thrilled with the perfume. I would continue with excessive flattery and slightly restrained, bluffed blackmail, claiming the airline had shown me a manifest of the contents of her excess baggage. Silly girl. Her parents would be disappointed if they found out. She would be comfortable with the idea that she should introduce me to one of her uncles. In fact, she might even think it was her idea. For her uncle was an important man, one Geronimo de Reyes, founder of Gateway Business Park in Cavite, halfway between Metro Manila and a Bond villain millionaire's row on the edge of the Taal volcano. There he assembled, with cheap labour from over here, expensive high-technology components from over there. This equipment was of strategic importance, and I assumed the FO would have been bursting to get into it for years. On my own opportunistic initiative, I couldn't resist giving it a try. Similarly, no one can resist a pretty girl, and Mr. Geronimo de Reyes, presumably therefore, can't resist a little favour asked for by his favourite niece. To be continued.